This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We humans have a complicated relationship with wolves. For centuries, so many of our stories have portrayed them as big and bad, either tormenting little pigs or eating unsuspecting grandmas. But Rick McIntyre knows better. He's a wolf behaviorist who's accumulated more than 100,000 sightings of wolves in the wild. Now retired from the National Park Service, he's written a series of books about the wolves of Yellowstone National Park and still wakes up early each day to watch them. He'll be in Cincinnati next month as part of the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens Barrows Conservation Lecture Series to discuss his latest book, Thinking Like a Wolf, Lessons from the Yellowstone Packs. Rick McIntyre joins me in this recorded interview to talk about the wolves he's observed and what he's learned from them. Thanks so much for being here, Rick.
Well, thank you. I've always been a supporter of public radio, so I'm happy to be with you today.
As I mentioned, humans, at least many of us, have vilified wolves in stories for centuries, and in lots of places have hunted them to near extinction. Why do you think some people have historically been so frightened by wolves?
Well, it's a complicated issue to try to fully understand that. I see wolves almost every day. So it's hard for me to think of them as the personification of evil. But I guess if we visualized history in the old world, Europe and Asia, where people might have, they were lucky, one cow, a couple of sheep. It's true that occasionally there are times where a few wolves might go after domestic livestock. And in the old world, people didn't have a lot of options of how to protect them like they do now in North America. In fact, in the Old Testament, the story of David using his sling to kill a wolf and then later to defeat Goliath is a, kind of an example of that. He was a shepherd. It is hard to understand. I'm kind of at the opposite end of that spectrum in the sense of my work here, where today, boy, I was around maybe 150 people that were having the experience of their life. We were watching a pack of about 15 wolves that were hunting bison. People just couldn't contain their excitement. An average-sized wolf here in Yellowstone is about 100 pounds, and adult bison are 1,000 to 2,000 pounds. So it's very dramatic to see a few wolves of that size, so small, going after such big animals. So everyone here had, you know, one of the best days of their life when they saw that encounter. Of course, the wolves failed to get anything.
What do you think so many people fundamentally misunderstand about wolves?
I guess the first thought would be, in general, there are people that probably have never really seen a wolf or at least watch wolves in the wild. When you do watch them in the wild, boy, one of the most exciting aspects is the friendliness that they have of each other. They love to play with each other. They love to play chasing games, wrestling games. We get to see mothers playing with their pups playing together. So all I can say is that there's a world of difference between people that have never actually watched wild wolves behaving naturally and those of us here in a place like Yellowstone that can see that. It's one of the best things you can do in your life.
I've heard you say no two species are more alike than humans and wolves. Explain what you mean by that.
Both of us essentially live in a family group or an extended family. So let's just say a typical wolf pack has the mother wolf, who normally would also have the title of the alpha female, which just means the highest ranking female. And then the father wolf would have the ranking of the alpha male. If there are younger adults, a pretty good chance that they would be older offspring of the newborn pups, and they would help their parents raise the little guys. Normally, a pack would start where one young male meets one young female. They pair off. The mating season is in February. They only have pups once a year, by the way. And raising pups is definitely a group effort. They need a lot of help, especially in terms of socialization. So as the adults are so busy hunting and trying to get food for the pups, the younger adults, yearlings, etc., they can fill in the essential role of playing with the pups, interacting with them, and that socializes the pups to the whole family. So it'd just be like humans having a couple of dogs in the house, and then the dogs have pups. Everyone wants to play with the pups.
I know you admire wolves for their resiliency, too, and that's a trait that some humans share. What are some examples of the most resilient wolves you've observed?
Well, yes, in my book, Thinking Like a Wolf, I talk about quite a few wolves that have had terrible setbacks. I'll give you a quick example. A young female, 926, she was at the very last week or two of her pregnancy. She was with her mate and with the pups that she had given birth to 11 and a half months ago. They were almost yearlings. So they went out on a hunt. They were starting to come back to their den area. And I guess they hadn't realized they had crossed into the territory of a rival pack. And as they came through a pass in the mountains, they stopped and they saw the pack that owned that territory charging at them. Now, the mother wolf was very savvy and she did exactly the right thing. She turned around, made a 180-degree turn, ran back through the pass. And her 11-month-old pups, they had been trained well by their mother, they ran off with her. But the father wolf, the alpha male, he did exactly the opposite. He stood his ground as an entire pack charged at him. In other words, he stood between them and his family, and he fought with an entire pack by himself. I don't know if there was any wolf that could have won that fight. They pulled him down, they were biting him. Then one of his pups came back through the pass and howled, maybe trying to find out where his father was. And that distracted the attacking wolves. So they left the father wolf. They tried to get the pup, but fortunately the pup got away. And then when the wolves came back, the father wolf was gone. They ran after him. They did some more damage, but he got away. He hid in the bushes, and the enemy wolves went off to do something else. The mother wolf came back. She followed his scent trail. She found him. They spent some time together, and then he died of his injuries. So it was a distressing thing to see. But on the other hand, the heroism of that alpha male to essentially sacrifice himself for his family. But what happened next was even more amazing in terms of what the mother wolf did. She got her existing pups safely back to her den. And just as she was about to give birth to the new ones, four of the males that killed her mate showed up. And I thought, oh, they're going to attack her now. But instead, one by one, she just walked right up to those guys and converted them to her side. And they joined her family to help her feed and protect the pups that had been sired by the guy that they had killed. Those are the type of things that we see here.
Your book, Thinking Like a Wolf, tells the stories of so many of the individuals you've observed over the many years you've been watching wolves. Can you tell us just a little bit about Wolf 907 and what made her so special?
Boy, that's exactly the right word. She was a special wolf. She became, I believe, the second oldest wolf we've ever had. She lived to be 11 and a half years old. She started having pups when she was two. So she had 10 litters. They only have pups once a year. So she pretty much had a pup every year. She had so many challenges in her life, and most of them came from females in her family. So she had a very difficult sister, essentially a twin sister. They were born in the same litter. And they went back and forth as they grew up over who was going to be the dominant one. She achieved the alpha female position, which is the leader of the pack. The females are dominant to the males, if I haven't said that clearly. People used to say the alpha male was the leader. No, it's the alpha female. The alpha male just works for the boss. But she and her sister just went back and forth. They would fight with each other. One would be alpha female, then she'd be overthrown by the sister. When that sister died, her daughter, in other words, 907, her niece became her rival. She died a very old wolf at 11 and a half years, the alpha female, once again, the leader of the pack.
I'm talking in this recorded interview with wolf behaviorist Rick McIntyre about the lessons he's learned from his decades of observing the wolf packs of Yellowstone National Park. Rick, you had mentioned to me when we talked earlier that she had a daughter. 907 had a daughter just about a year and a half ago. Is her daughter, you think, an alpha in the making?
Yeah, I love talking about the daughter. So she was radio collared recently. And when a wolf gets the radio collar, they get a number. So she's now known as 1479. I still sometimes slip and call her by how I think of her, and that would be Princess, because that's exactly what she is. She's a little princess. She had no surviving siblings. So she missed out on the normal play and interaction that a little pup would have with his or her brothers and sisters. A litter here might be 4 to 6. We don't know what happened, but she was the only survivor. So she missed out on all that play and interaction among her same age. It'd be like kids in a kindergarten socializing. But there were a lot of yearlings. Those would be pups that had been born the previous year. And they loved to play with the little girl. So she got all this extra attention. And from her mother as well, which was 907. I worry that she thinks for her whole life she's going to be entitled to getting all that extra attention. But now there are new pups in the family, and so she's getting to play with them. That would be pups from last year, I guess I should say, now that she's a yearling.
Well, you've written about so many fascinating male wolves, too. I think 302 probably sounds like guys some of us have encountered.
Well, yeah, I hope that wasn't too bad of an experience if you're referring to yourself. 302's problem, and you may know some guys that have this problem, he was just too good looking for his own good, and he knew it. When he grew up, he would, in the mating season, which is February, he would leave his parents and just kind of stroll along going into the territories of other packs for romantic encounters. And boy, the young girls in the other packs, they just couldn't get enough of him. He had this shiny black coat, and I guess I'll just say he knew how to treat the ladies. And they would just, I don't know if you've ever met any guys like him, but he had a very short attention span. So I'll just put it this way. Once he got what he wanted, he was gone to the next girl, and then the next girl, and the next girl. The ones that he did get pregnant, well, it was up to them to raise them with the help of their family. He would come back the next mating season, and they would forgive him, and he'd do exactly the same thing. I'd seen him do this year after year. And so when I was watching him, people would come along and they would say, oh, you know, who is this wolf? What's his story? And I would say a few things similar to what I just told you. And on a very consistent basis, women, never guys, but human women would defend him. And they would say, oh, you know, he didn't mean it. He, you know, you're too hard on him and all that stuff. It really taught me a lot about how women see good-looking bad guys. The reason there's a whole book about 302, one of my latter books, is that he really turned his life around when he got old, and he actually became a great hero. We sold several of my books to the movie people, and they've already written the script, and 302 is, his story is kind of the climax. That story of him becoming a great hero at the very, very end of his life, boy, it is really dramatic. I've just never had a wolf that changed so drastically for good. When he died, boy, people here that knew him, grown men, tough guys, they were just sobbing, because he actually was loved by so many people that had seen him change over his lifetime. It was just an amazing story.
They say you can't change the bad boys, but 302 proves them wrong, huh?
Yeah. And I think he finally realized that he had to accept responsibility for fathering pups. And he literally died successfully protecting his litter. And fortunately, we have reason to believe that before he passed away, the pups had come back to their father, and he knew that his death had accomplished that his death had really meant something.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, there's also the story that is told so beautifully on This American Life, an episode you did with them about Wolf 8, who was a runt who helped an alpha female raise her litter of pups after her mate died. One of those pups was 21, who I've heard you call the greatest of all male wolves. Did their relationship, that relationship between 8 and 21, change your understanding of wolves even after all the years you've spent observing them?
Let me mention that I was around wolves for 15 summers in Denali National Park in Alaska, and then a little bit in Glacier in northern Montana. But here in Yellowstone, you can be around them year-round and see them pretty much every day. The big advantage here is, yes, we can see what their family lives are like. We can oftentimes see their den because it can be in an open area. And it was the first case we documented of adoption. So 8 was the runt of his litter. He was bullied and pushed around by his bigger brothers. And we never honestly thought that he would amount to much. When he was the equivalent of a teenager, he came across a mother wolf whose mate had died, and she had 8 pups that she was trying to raise as a single mother. An instinct apparently kicked into 8 that he wanted to help. So he ran over to the pups, played with them. The mother of the pups probably was concerned to see this stranger approaching her pups. But what she saw was that he was benevolent toward him, and she was desperate. He didn't look like the ideal alpha male at all. In fact, exactly the opposite. He didn't look like he had much potential, but she took him in, which meant that they were going to be mates. He raised those pups just like they were his own. And then for many years after that, he and the alpha female had pups. One of the 8 that he adopted and trained was 21. They had a very, very close relationship. When 21 grew up, when he was the equivalent of a teenager, they would go on hunts together. They would team up to make a kill and bring back food to the mother wolf and her new pups. I'm laughing because sometimes I can't help myself to compare. If 21 was like any human character, real or fictional, it would be, I'd have to say, Superman. He was like the super wolf. You know, with the story of Superman, he was adopted and trained and raised by just a ordinary guy that was a farmer in Kansas. I guess you could say that 21 was raised by an ordinary wolf. And that ordinary wolf trained 21 to be this great, great wolf. 21 saw his adopted father fight a much, much bigger alpha male and somehow defeat him. And then 21 witnessed what happened next. 8 decided to spare his life and let the guy go. And when 21 became the champion of Yellowstone, never lost a fight, but he followed the example that his adopted father set for him and always let the defeated guy go. He was very merciful.
You've observed wolves with some of the most positive traits that they can share with humans: resilience, courage, loyalty. Do they share any of our worst traits too?
Well, we've already talked a little bit about 302 in his early years. Yeah. So you may have heard there are some human men out there that aren't totally responsible. I guess, though, what we can talk about briefly is a female. 21, he eventually, it's normal for young males, they leave home, they join another pack or start another pack. So he joined an existing pack, the Druid Peak Pack. And pretty much from the first few moments that he joined, he was absolutely drawn to one of their young females, known as 42. And it was her drawn to him as well. It was pretty much love at first sight. But there was a big problem. 42 had a no good sister, and she was known as Wolf 40. And she, in human terms, was probably a psychopath, and that's 40. She attacked her own mother, drove her out of the family, drove a sister out of the family, and then turned her aggression on the nice sister, which was 42. And it actually made the situation worse for 42, that now 42 was in a relationship with this, well, this handsome stranger, I'll say. So it just made 42's life much harder. I don't think we've ever had this before. In fact, I don't know that I've ever heard of it. 42 years in a row killed all of her sister's pups. There's nothing that can be worse than that. And 21 was really helpless. I think I said that he would never mistreat or harm a female. So it was up to 42. And the short version of what happened was she put together an alliance of younger females, and that enabled them to protect their pups. And they overthrew 40. I don't think they intended to do this, but to do that, they had to win a fight, a physical fight with her. And we didn't actually see that battle, but we know that the consequences were that she was bitten enough times that through blood loss, she lost her life. And despite the fact that 40 had killed 42 sisters 2 years in a row, 42 after the death of her sister, she did exactly the opposite. She adopted and raised her sister's pups. So, you know, what a story that two sisters, same parents, same upbringing, they were just the exact opposites in their moral behavior. And here's a, you know, one final point on that story. We know that one of the pups, a little girl that was born to 40 and was raised by 42, she grew up, she was captured and radio collared. So we know her life story. She was known as 472. She eventually left home, met a guy, started a family, and raised many, many pups. So I'm going to ask you a question. Do you think that daughter that was born to 40 or was raised by 42, what do you think? Did she turn out to have a personality and character like her biological mother or by her adopted mother? What do you think?
I hope nurture won out.
That's right. Yeah, she was very, very much like 42, very much. Isn't that a story?
It sure is. Well, I've been talking with wolf behaviorist and author Rick McIntyre. His latest book is Thinking Like a Wolf, Lessons from the Yellowstone Packs. He'll be in Cincinnati next month for the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens Barrows Conservation Lecture Series. You can find details on our website, wvxu.org. Thank you so much for your time today, Rick. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you.
Okay, and maybe your reward for doing such a good job is you're going to come back as an alpha female wolf in Yellowstone. Would you like that?
Oh, that sounds good. Well, you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.